I'm Cheryl Corley, in for Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Just ahead, while prosecutors have cleared President-elect Barack Obama in the case against Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich, who's accused of trying to sell Obama's Senate seat, the scandal has revealed other surprising alliances. We'll talk about a connection to the Indian community. But first, it's extremely dire straits in Zimbabwe. The southern Africa country is said to be near collapse. Nearly 6 million people face starvation in a country once called the breadbasket of Africa. An outbreak of cholera has killed nearly 1,200 people and left more than 24,000 ill. Add to that a political crisis with President Robert Mugabe, who's been in power since the country won its independence in 1980, refusing to leave his post following disputed elections held earlier this year. And the UN is calling for more international aid for the country. However, the situation only seems to worsen. Joining us is NPR's Charlene Hunter-Gault in South Africa. Welcome, Charlene.
Thank you.
Well, starvation, sickness, political disarray, which of these can be solved or at least treated first?
That's a tough question, because they're all equally important. The political situation is holding up any credible, significant response to the humanitarian crisis, and yet there's no end at the moment in sight to the political crisis. Some of the countries, I think, have been able to get in some clean water, but it's a fraction of what is needed in the country. As you pointed out, so many millions of people are in dire straits needing clean water. The children are playing in fetid streams that are infected with cholera. And this past week, the United States ambassador said that while the official death toll is something a little over a thousand, he thinks that it could be in the thousands, because the infection rate is also somewhere around 21,000. So it's difficult to say. They're all important.
Mm-hmm. Robert Mugabe is in charge for now, was supposed to be a power-sharing arrangement. Is that situation likely to change anytime soon with Robert Mugabe being president?
Well, you know, this past week, Jindai Frazier was in the region. She's the U.S. Secretary of State for Africa, and she was consulting with regional leaders, because the United States has taken a significant U-turn. It was supporting relief for the financial crisis in Zimbabwe based on the power-sharing deal, humanitarian support based on the power-sharing deal, but that's really going nowhere. And so when she spoke with leaders in the region, she got the impression that they were willing to get tougher on Mugabe, but she's now saying the United States isn't going to support any of that unless Mugabe steps down. What she did say is that the Southern African leaders are saying one thing privately and nothing or substantially nothing publicly, but she believes that they may be willing to act on Mugabe within the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm. I understand that a Zimbabwean human rights activist who had been missing for several weeks was taken to court, and state media said she was accused of attempting to recruit government opponents for military training to overthrow the president. I was wondering if you knew anything about Justina Mukoko, I think is her name.
Well, the problem is this. Both Jindai Frazier and other activists have said that, you know, something like 41, 42 activists have been missing for weeks and if not months, and mm-hmm. nobody knows where they were or are. Now, spotting this activist today going to court led journalists and other activists to look in the jails, and I think they've found some of those. But this is another one of the conditions that the opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai has put on his willingness to continue in this power, in these power sharing talks. You know, he claims that he won the election, and then there was a runoff, and so the results were very close. Mm-hmm. So as a result, that's why they're having the power sharing government now. He's saying, or at least the talks, he's saying that unless all of these 40-some people are released by January 1st, he's pulling out of these talks. So So even just citing them today gave some consolation, even though I think they're going to be charged with some serious crimes, but at least they're not dead.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what is the opposition party really able to help and do in this crisis, especially when you think about an infrastructure that is really in collapse, hospitals mostly closed, maternity centers closed? It seems this is a great price to pay for political infighting.
It's a great price to pay, but, you know, I think they see they're standing up for what is right. They don't feel they should capitulate to Mugabe's determining how things should go. I mean, the big argument has been over how to divide the portfolios in the unity government. And one of the critical ones is Home Affairs, which controls the police. And the concern there, having control over the police, is based on the kind of rampant brutality that both the police and the military unleashed on the opposition. So it's not a minor thing. Now, what can they do? I think they want to stand on principle, and they're hoping that they can get the support of the international community, because if they capitulate on the Home Affairs, it means that they're just shadows in the unity government. At least that's the position that they've took. So that there's not a whole lot they can do at this point, which is why I think so many of them are calling on the neighboring countries, mm-hmm. that is the Southern African Development Community, known as SADC, the African Union, which is the organization of all the African states on the continent, as well as the international community, to get tougher on Mugabe, and particularly South Africa, because it has probably the greatest leverage of all.
Mm-hmm. How likely is it that pressure from South Africa or any of the neighboring African nations could help bring a stop to what's happening in Zimbabwe?
Well, I think that a united African leadership could do a lot more than the international community, because Mugabe can continue to condemn the West, as he has done. He even blamed the West for what he called germ warfare, for the cholera problem, which Jendai Frazier said this week shows that he's losing or has lost his mind. But I think that the thing that causes the Africans to dig in their heels more is when the West speaks without them. And so, you know, South Africa has said this situation has to be resolved by Zimbabweans. Others are saying it has to be resolved by the Africans. And today, Desmond Tutu called on South Africa. I mean, he was scathing in his attack, saying that South Africa has lost its moral high ground. It has betrayed its apartheid legacy of struggle by not getting tougher to come to the aid of the people and siding more with what he called the dictator Mugabe. I don't think he used that word today, but, you know, he also said that if Mugabe continues in this vein, and he actually echoed Jendai Frazier, he could be tried for in the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity. But certainly, which is why I think Jendai Frazier made this trip to the region to see if she couldn't put some fire under the feet of these African leaders, because if they themselves stood up with one voice, it could make a difference, mm-hmm. many think.
Yeah. I want to talk about the medical situation there. Cholera has killed nearly 1,200 people. There's worry that it's only going to keep spreading. What's being done about that?
Well, as I said earlier, the U.S. ambassador here, Ambassador Bose, says he believes it's more than 1,200. He believes it's in the thousands. Mm-hmm. And there's a limited amount that the international community can do if the Zimbabwean government is going to block access of these Western aid agencies. Now, as I said earlier, there has been, I forget which agency has brought in water recently, but it obviously is going to help the situation, but the situation is so dire that that the amount of water they've been able to bring in so far is going to be, pardon my expression, but a drop in the bucket. Mm. Moreover, as you indicated earlier, the hospitals, nobody's being paid because there's no money. And so the doctors are not there. And even those who might be volunteering don't have any medicines to to feed, to administer to these people. So, you know, you have a dire medical situation. You have the AIDS issue where, you know, even if I don't know how many antiretrovirals are available now, they're certainly saving lives in other parts of the continent, including South Africa. But when you're taking, you know, when you take an antibiotic, your doctor tells you to have something on your stomach. So these people with HIV, even if they're getting the antiretrovirals, which is doubtful, but that's going to make them sicker if they have to take this medication without any food. So one thing feeds upon another, and I think while everything is really terrible, one of the worst legacies of this whole thing, because sick people, either they die or they get well, and we hope they'll get well if there's assistance. But like you said earlier, Zimbabwe used to be the basket case, a breadbasket of the region.
Yeah.
It's now the basket case because of lack of food. It also produced, and this was one of Mugabe's great legacies, a highly educated population. Now that legacy is being totally destroyed by the fact that nobody's teaching these children. The children are too sick or too weak to study or to go to school. So, you know, there is no bright light anywhere in this tunnel. I've often said, you know, quoted this old saying we used to have back in the 60s, it's always darkest just before it gets pitch black. Well, in Zimbabwe, it is now pitch black.
NPR Charlene Hunter-Galt joining us from South Africa, talking to us about the dire situation in Zimbabwe. Thank you so much for joining us, Charlene.
And thank you for shining the spotlight on this terrible situation.